Welcome to Flyover Conservative Podcast with David and Stacey Whited, where we break down current events and examine culture through the lens of conservative Christian values.
You know, when we first started the Flyover Conservative Podcast, one of our main focuses, because, you know, if you can take yourself in the Wayback Machine mentally to January of 21, the concerns that you had at that time, you wanted, you know, doctors are going to shoot straight with you when you see a death ticker on every major mainstream media. And we had doctors had 10,000 plus patients, some of them in their 90s, and they'd lost nobody. And they had a way of treating them that was a little different than the state government armed approved approach. And that was an answer, you know, to people. But it kind of makes sense that if people are in a field and they're kind of hitting the tree in the right way, we've seen a lot of people that just kind of rose to the occasion in their field. But the thing that has impressed me the most, you know, we interviewed the Cheesecake Company in Oregon, you know, recently.
Somebody
was a social worker and then kind of decided to flip it and started kind of a Christian-based Cheesecake Company in Oregon
with
and kind of went against the grain and like repurposed a skill set that was sort of hidden and then kind of brought it to the forefront. People like Clay Clark, who never talked about religion or politics and kind of focused on business. But when they started shutting down the businesses, like all of a sudden the dam broke and went all, you know, faith and,
exactly.
and Jesus and politics kind of went the other way. It's this repurposing of skills that I see God doing in the earth that is so amazing. Mm-hmm. People that this is what I do, but this is what I'm also really passionate about. And it's like, okay, I can maybe do this in a new way and bring this new skill. And God's like just kind of reshuffling all of the cards and the chess pieces on the table. I did a special on the conspiracy conversation.
Which was so loved, by the way. People went crazy for this.
Loved it. I loved it. And it's somebody who's a anesthesiologist, top of his field in that space, but had, you know, the spare time he's working on. He started, you know, he's into apologetics and Christian theology and how this all is, and put it into a really great novel that kind of brings these Book of Genesis characters to life in a really exciting way that people can kind of dive into. Is really exciting. And
he also wrote kids' books.
And a side hustle, yeah, kids' books. And on a side hustle, he's like, you know, also got to do a little writing and became an award-winning author. He's a physician, children's book author, and just an all-around great guy, Mr. Mark Huffman.
Yay!
Hey.
Welcome back.
Great to be here.
Thank
you so much for having me.
I'm honored. I get to be in an interview with you guys today. I just had to listen last time.
We bring a girl into the
no
conversation
kidding.
This time. Mark, I love it because you're one of these characters that's kind of hard to pin down and say, this is Mark Huffman. This is what he is. This is what he's about. This is what he does. You know, it's probably a little great when your parents or family are talking about you at Bunko night or whatever. It's pretty hard to describe Mark and what he's about. But give us a shot real quick. Who are you and what are you about?
I'm eclectic, I guess. Well, first, and your audience will appreciate this, everything that I do, I want to glorify God in it. Even if it's not, the things I write are not always, very few of them are preachy, actually. Even my antediluvian novels, and I'm working on the third one, bother me about that sometime because I really need to finish it. I know what happens. The flood happens. But I still got to put the words down. But that's my most overtly Christian book. But even that I wrote in a way that if you don't believe Genesis at all, it's still a good novel, you know, as evidenced by the fact that you mentioned it is award-winning. I won the 2021 Benjamin Franklin IBPA Award. And if you don't know what that is, I didn't either. So I asked my publisher and he said, well, we're popping champagne. So it's a pretty big
it's a big deal.
Wow.
Well, I drove on to my orthopedic cases that I had later that day, but I appreciated that they got some champagne. But my children's books are meant for everybody. My little, you know, consulting, dipping my toes into political satire, screenplays, all that stuff, everything that I do in medicine too is meant to glorify God, even if it's just trying to use the talents that I'm discovering He gave me in a useful, fun way, and not necessarily preachy, just something that'll make people laugh.
Well, people can find out more about your work and what you do at thehuffmanletters.com. But I like this to be a big encouragement because I know there's a lot of people watching, and it's kind of somehow got into the American way. You sit down with your guidance counselor, you know, in high school, and you kind of choose this path. And sometimes people get you know, say 27, 28, 29, 30, they kind of have these things. And what happens a lot of times in families is they'll be like, I really wanted to do this and I can't, I gave this up. Now I got kids and a career and a mortgage. And so it's like, I'm going to make, my kids are going to be that thing. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to go, you know, mm-hmm. go for it. And it's an interesting time and space we're in. Like when we, it's been quite a while now since we just had our 31st anniversary, but right around the time yep. we turned 30, Stacey had always wanted to do music and had been in, you know, dinner theater and high schools, all this, you know, singing and, you know, it was in the Miss America system, all this stuff. And it was like, hey, let's go for this. And so we moved to Nashville and produced an album.
We're like the Beverly Hillbillies. We loaded up the truck and moved to Nashville.
Moved to Nashville. But, you know, we're in an interesting world where it's not the Loretta Lynn space where you got to get, you know, radio stations to like it. We hired all the same studio people that Garth Brooks and Tim McGraw and everybody else had, you know, there in Nashville, mm-hmm. had a top producer that had worked with Dixie Chicks and a lot of other people. And we put together a project that we're super proud about. Now we still look back and listen. I'm like, man, I'm proud of that work.
Yep.
But it's this idea of look, you know, being... We used to say 80 looking back, but now it's probably 100.
Well, now we're getting closer to 80, so now we have to say it's
80 seemed further away.
Yeah.
But living a life the best is saying, okay, God, here's my fish and my loaves. Here's the things that you gave me. I want to exhaust those as much as possible. And the win isn't you become Faith Hill or, you know, the win is looking back with the smallest number of regrets mm-hmm. and not being pigeonholed in, I only do this. And then your life sort of becomes limited to you do your work. And then you come home at night mm-hmm. and, you know, watch Netflix and nothing, you know, against watching, you know, movies. But I think everybody has a no little way. Bit more in them to put out. How do you process that? And, you know, you say, hey, I'm doing this new thing. And people say, well, you spent all this time and money becoming, you know, big in this other field. Like, why don't you just stick to what you're doing? Like, how do you process this idea of having a really broad resume and doing things that maybe this isn't something, you know, you're going to hang your hat on or pay the bills with. In your case, it's become award winning, but you know, I still see music, instruments and stuff behind you. Like you're, mm-hmm. seems like you're wringing everything out of the washcloth humanly possible.
You know, you say that, and I still feel like I waste a lot of time consuming. And you mentioned Netflix, and that's the thought that popped into my head before you said it. There's a lot of people who spend their free time just hours and hours and hours of consuming, and that's fine. Obviously, I like that. As a creator, I want you to consume at least a little bit. Ideally, my stuff. But it's kind of exactly what you said. Ultimately, it comes down to just sitting down and doing it. Yeah. And I didn't mean to write a novel. I literally – did I tell you how I wrote the novel last time? Even if not,
it did.
Yeah, revisit our audience.
But I was on call as a surgery intern, and I drew. That was my creative outlet. I did some concept art. I made a little money at it. Nothing big, but I was good at drawing. I never thought about writing. I placed out of English. I like to read, but that's all. I was an intern, a surgery intern, and it was 2:00 in the morning. And there's no point in trying to go to sleep at 2:00 in the morning. And I literally started writing what ended up being one of the middle chapters of my second book. Just because I had this idea and it had been percolating. But I thought maybe I should just try to write it. And then I just kept doing it. And that's ultimately when you're talking about a creative pursuit, sitting down and doing it is what you have to do. Not mm-hmm. learning how to do it. So much of that comes by just putting the words down and putting them enough mm-hmm. of them down that you figure out what works. Another important thing for anybody thinking I should write a book, because you should write a book. I'm not paying any bills with any of my creative stuff. Maybe one day that'll happen. But I think you mentioned J.K. Rowling. Even Faith Hill, so much is a roll of the dice. So much is a lottery ticket. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you don't. There are so many talented people. There's so many great books. And the people who end up becoming rich and famous are not necessarily the people who are the best at the thing. Yeah, obviously, Faith Hill is massively talented. Mm-hmm. Joe Olling is massively talented. But there are a lot of people who are selling a lot of books that are very marginally talented who just got that lucky break.
Yeah,
sure.
Or that viral clip or that one YouTube video that blew up because some social media stuff. There's 100 stories like that. And honestly, if you look back at the history of literary giants, you would be shocked at how many of them were dead before their books blew up.
Mm. It's true.
It's tons of them. Tons and tons and tons. You don't realize it after the fact, but there's so many people who are posthumously rich and famous, which I hope that's not me. I hope I'm just a little bit alive at least if that actually happens. it's really, really helpful to have a real job when you're pursuing this stuff.
Then you don't have pressure on the creative side of you.
Right. You don't have this, if I don't sell, and you have no control over it. You really, really don't. I mean, you can market to Facebook friends. It's very, very limited. But if I don't sell, I can't pay the bills and I've got a family accountant. So I will say that having a job like, you know, being a private practice physician gives you a little bit of freedom to not worry about the time frame and really worry about the creating a good creative product. And I will say my children's books, which again, I didn't mean to do. I wrote a poem in the car while my wife was driving to Florida. It was her turn. She didn't drive the whole time, but I thought this would be funny. I just have an idea to write a poem about the Toot Fairy. And that is T-O-O-T. And it was hilarious. And then it ended up being a book, and now I have a bunch of them. But just,
I think that is so cool. How do you find the time? So I know you're talking about you have your own practice, so that does give you a little more time. And in the car, exactly. But like, you know, you have a family, you've got children, you got a wife, you have your practice, and you are also an author. How do you balance all of that?
I don't know. The authoring comes way, way, way low, but you bang out some words here and there. The only real time consuming thing, I will admit that some of this is, I feel pretty comfortable saying this, very much God-given talent that I didn't know that I had. As far as the children's books, I mean, 1 or 2 days and I'll knock one out. If we talk about this book that I had a little bit of involvement in, Everything is Ice Cream, which is my latest kind of book that I participated in making, not the whole thing, but my part in that took a weekend. Yeah, there you go. That's very topical. And maybe we can talk about that later.
Yeah.
But my part in that took a weekend. I wrote the Toot Fairy in the car. The only one that takes really, really lot of time is the novels. So if you think about writing a book, you're just going to have to spend a lot of time doing it. You're going to have to do 100 words here, 100 words there. Dictating yourself text in the car is actually not a bad way to do it. One of my favorite projects, and probably the least likely to ever get produced in a major way, is a 22-song, two-act musical based on the cosmic horror of H.P. Lovecraft. And it would win a Tony. It's actually on my website. That's my favorite thing that I have on the website.
Wow.
But it's all a screenplay. I think it's on other writing. But it took me 13 days to dictate that in the car. There it is. There's that middle one.
I love it. So speak to this crowd, though, here real quick, because I want to mention something. In my 30s, late 30s, I picked up playing the guitar. Mm-hmm. And compared to anybody that plays the guitar, I stink. But I'm better than everyone who's never picked up the guitar.
True.
And what's a weird thing is I had friends that would say, oh, what are you gonna try for American Idol? Are you going to be in a band or something? I'm like, no, I'm trying to move. There's two groups of people who can play the guitar, ones who can't. Mm-hmm. And I stink compared to anybody. But I'm better. What I became in the process by sitting there until my fingers hurt, learning songs and going through it, like I grew and learned. It probably helped pieces of my brain that maybe help, you know, with something else. But people stop at that threshold and say, well, they get stuck in the identity of, well, that's not what I do. And I think monetization of the arts have messed up people's minds a little bit. If there was an EMP or something that went off tomorrow, we were all just, you know, sitting around a fire at night, we would tell stories. Because it's going to pass the time. You'd play a song and we'd all sing. It wouldn't be like, oh, hey, is that going to get picked up by Sony or something, you know, some record? Right. Like, no, I'm doing this because I'm human and this is what makes me different than my dog. I love my dog. He's amazing. But he's never going to create a new song. Mm-hmm. He's never going to, you know, change the lyrics to a song that exists. You know, one of my gifts, and it's never going to be monetized, is when we're alone in the car, I could turn most any song into some sort of a sexual advance towards Stacey. And it's like, oh, that
it
was
will not be monetized.
That was so inappropriate. It's so wrong, but it happened to rhyme and it's very funny.
And he used to do that to songs on my CD, which then would make it very hard for me to go sing the songs on my CD.
Hey, some stuff just rhymes. And you know, we've worked together our whole life. And so doing inappropriate sexual advances to, you know, somebody's working with you was a great thing.
That's your wife.
That was your wife. Yeah. Yes. It's good to keep it in that context.
Yes.
But we are creative. you know, we have a, there's a creative God that just never stops creating. God didn't create, you know, for 6 days and like, well, I'm tapped out. He excels creativity. You know, you look at giraffes and penguins and you look at all these, it's like, we obviously are made in his image. We're designed to create. So what do you say to people out there that are like, you know, I kind of got this in me, but I probably couldn't make any money with it. I think if you could break that off and just do.
I absolutely agree. Never pursue anything creative for the purpose of making money. It will just be frustrating. Obviously, if you're a professional and that ends up being what you do for a living, there's an element of, even professional songwriters, okay, I got to knock out like 30 songs. You know, if you're a professional writer, there are going to be times where you just have to do it as a job. But as a hobby, as a side pursuit, you have to have the goal of wanting to hold a book that you made. And there are no gatekeepers anymore. I mean, I've done all sorts of different, I've done traditional press and small press and self-pub and all the different permutations of that. But the fact is, if you are committed to putting down enough words to make a book, you can, at almost no expense, hold that book in your hand. That's what your goal has to be. It's monetization, you're just going to be frustrated, like almost every published author is, which again, it's nice to have a stream of income that is not based on.
And most people have a main thing, but the, I forget who said the quote, but too many men die with the music still in them, you know, and it might be, I met a lady at a, we did a live event with Robin Bullock and Elijah Streams and stuff a few weeks back in Illinois. And a lady came up and we were talking. Her dad, like in his 60s or something, he was in a main job. He's always inventing and putzing in his shop. But have you seen the straps that go over your shoulder and they got the little hooks where you can like lift a refrigerator? You know, like two guys can lift it. And it like, that was one of his, he invented that, you know, and that became like his biggest success. And it's, you know, patented and it goes on.
Great
and it's
idea.
Like, it's like just something that he was doing. It's like, we need a better way to do this. These are, and so he invented this strap. He wasn't a professional mover or anything like that. He just, he was putzing in his garage. So I love that you're taking the things that are in you and the way that you see problems, the way you see the world, the way you see ideas and getting them out there. In closing, let's hit this book. This is, I want to preface this, Flyer Family. This is, it looks like a children's book and it's written in a very Dr. Seuss kind of a style, but this is not for children. This is funny. This would be for the market of the people who, like Babylon Bee, like, you know, satire, and maybe also a little bit of that crowd who would have bought like the toilet paper with the pictures of Hillary Clinton on it, you know, during the campaign. Like you see these things advertised, you know, online. That's just funny. You give to a buddy because it's clever. You're going to laugh. And we're also in a world where there's so much darkness in this and there's a lack of justice in the world. So kind of humor is sort of the only way to sort of punch back at it. But let's hit this ice cream book here real quick and where people can get that.
Well, I have a copy too, actually, if you can believe that.
Hey!
Totally agree, especially when it comes to politics. There's so much vitriol, so much anger. Everything is divisive. A lot of it's on purpose. But there's so much emotion, just negative, toxic emotion when it comes to politics, especially when you feel strongly about it, when you see what's happening in it, when you see the end point if something's not done about it. And I know y'all understand what I'm talking about, but things are not great right now. But I think two things really, two recent phenomena really shows the value of humor and a little bit of gentle mockery, but nothing too poisonous, nothing too personal. I mean, it is about Joe Biden, but the Babylon Bee, like you mentioned, massively successful. And they poke fun at themselves too. I mean, they poke fun at not just, you know, the other side, but, you know, the church all the time. And then the person who I think has done it so effectively is Donald Trump, just with his silly little nicknames. And most of the time he becomes friends with them afterwards, you know, and now they're in conversations for being vice president. But his ability to kind of goof on people instead of just trying to destroy them personally. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. There's so many funny quirks. And when you can joke a lot, like our family, we raised our kids where, you know, hey, we're always joking. I'm the butt of so many jokes
poor
with our adult
David.
Our adult children. But I have
but you handle it so well.
I have so many funny little quirks. You know, you were talking before we went live. We're talking about the show Monk. You know, if anybody's ever seen that, mm-hmm. I got quite a bit of Monk in me. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when you watch that, it's like, I'm a funny character and I think I'm funny on the stuff that's not intended. It's just quirky, weird things that I do. Yeah. If you can maintain that sort of joy and, mm-hmm. and I think it comes back to a fence. Like if you can like disassociate yourself and just not partner with offense, if you can become unoffendable,
so important.
Then you can participate in comedy.
Because offense is a prison.
Yeah,
you put yourself in a prison, and that's not a place you want to be for sure.
I tell my kids that when you let everything offend you, you're giving other people a lever to control what you do and what you say and your emotions, and you don't have to do it. Mm-hmm. You just don't have to. You can laugh at yourself. You don't have to be offended. There's nothing that has to offend you. So absolutely agree. So we thought that, you know, me and some other kind of successful creatives thought we'll do a little, instead of, you know, 6 months of nonstop vicious anger and personal attacks, maybe we'll introduce something, hopefully, that'll spread pretty far and wide, especially when you're talking to undecideds, when you're talking to that mushy American middle. I think something like this project could persuade them one way or another in a way that, you know, a position paper by a DC think tank, like, you know, a conservative think tank, or a big op-ed or, you know, impassioned political opinions are just not going to.
Yeah.
I think it could be a useful tool. I don't mind telling you, you may be surprised, but I don't think the right president for the next term is an octogenarian struggling with dementia. Mm. I don't think you would choose that in a surgeon. I don't think you would choose that in a dentist or a car mechanic or an accountant. I don't think there's any job where you would see someone who functions in that job, like Joe Biden functions as the president at this moment, and say, that's my guy.
Yeah.
That's not even particularly political. That's just looking at age and demographics and knowing about health.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And looking where our country is right now.
And I love it. And when there's certain things out of your reach, you can't control, you know, just laugh a little bit at it and kind of, you know, magnify, you know, that's what comedy is. You take a quirk and just blow it up. And that's what this is about. So you can get this book at Amazon, at Barnes and Noble, pretty much everywhere books are sold. But I encourage people, keep the name Mark Huffman in your mind, because he's an example, Flavor Family, for myself, for others that say, you know what, I'm not defined by one thing I do for a living, and whatever God has put in me while I'm alive, let's exhaust those skills, because you never know what he's going to take and use for his good. And you know,
it's go so good.
Go to your grave or the nursing home or wherever else with as few of regrets as possible. Mark, you walked that out really good. Thank you for what you do.
Thank you for joining us.
And we're going to put the link down below, the interview that we did on
Conspiracy awesome. Conversation.
Slightly more serious topics with the Leviathan series. Book 1 and 2 are done. 3 is on the way. Pressure Mark that it comes out. If you read 1 and 2, you're going to want that third one. So Mark, thanks for what you're doing. Put the links down below. You guys continue to follow his work at thehuffmanletters.com. And
update the website then.
That's perfect.
That'll
can't
be
wait.
This week's job.
Yeah, there you go.
Sounds great.
Thank you so much, Mark. All right, let's get our stuff together here. Hi. I'm David Whited. If we can skip the hi, my name's David part, because that's where I got it then to derail. Hi. But I did good. See, look. First thing says,
say your name.
Say your name. Say your name, David Whited. Have you been wondering what to do with the spare time you have on Saturday mornings? Have I got a way for you to fill that time? Not cleaning your garage, folding your laundry, or doing something with yourself. Filling your head with worthless information about what may or may not have happened 5,000 years ago. Have you ever wondered about ancient civilizations or about chemtrails in the sky? Or have you ever had a friend at school talk to you about... friend at school?
Some days when you're sitting there with your lunch pail, you're talking to your friends at school, they bring up your flat earth, and you think it's a flat earth. I don't know if your flat earth is flat or not. I don't know, alligators are angry because they got all those teeth and no toothbrush.
And it's all true. And we talk about it every Saturday. We talk about Rubik's Cubes and stuff. We like to have conversations with people that have made documentaries, written books. Oh, this is terrible. I can like feel myself hating watching this later. Okay, give me a swoosh. Let's do this thing for real this time. I got a show for you. hang on, my eyes red now? You won't be able to tell in there. Peter can fix it. Can you run it through a filter? Can you run it through the Brad Pitt filter and get rid of my red eyes? Oh, I'm probably doing the world a disservice.
This is a crazy time to be alive.
Well, just in our lifetime, used to be where you'd hear your grandparents talk about how cheap gas was and stuff. And it was 75 years before, 50 years you know, before.
And so we've seen a lot of changes since Biden took office. $700 more a month
than what you needed in January of 21 when he took office.
You might hear these kind of things and think, oh, that's overwhelming. I can't control the government. I can't control what they're doing. I can't control the spending. But we can take care of ourselves.
You want to make sure that you're buying bullion from somebody that you can trust and someone that does not charge you a commission when you go to sell.
If there's going to be a commission, have it on the front end, not the back end when it skyrockets. And now you're like, oh my gosh, look at this big, huge commission I got to pay because it's on the back end before I sell it.
You can buy an ounce of silver for $23. So this is something everybody can get into. And if silver goes to $50, if it goes to $75, if it goes to $100, all of those profits are yours. And that's happening while the dollar is buying less and less at the actual grocery store.
So you can go to flyovergold.com, fill out your information. When you do that, someone from Dr. Kirk's team will get a hold of you to set up a free consultation. It doesn't cost you any money whatsoever. Or to do the same thing, you can just call 720-605-3900. Hey, Flyover family, it is going to be a crazy year. Obviously, year of election 2024. Who knows what the future holds? But if we look back at the past, we look at what's happened, the year of elections, it's never good. So we're like, okay, what can we do as a family to prepare to take care of our family during this time?
And there's things that you can store up that are cheap and easy. You can get beans and rice, and there's prep packs, but you need a protein in the mix to sustain yourself and sustain the people that depend on you to provide for them if the supply chain is broken for any length of time.
And we truly have searched everywhere to find the best source, and we have come across one, flyovermeat.com. Non-lab grown meat, non-mRNA jabs. It's all American beef. The shelf life is actually 10 plus years.
So high quality meat that you can take care of your family no matter what happens.
That is exactly right. So go to flyovermeat.com, use promo code FLYOVER. Enjoy this flyover clip.